Detention cells. Time to turn our little friends off. Sooner would be better than later, Bobby said. You ain't wrong about that, Amos said. He started whistling tunelessly between his teeth. I'm not going to be able to stop this while folks go through. Fuck that, one of the others said. Not winding up half in and half out me. Bobby turned to the soldier. You'll do as you're told, or I will shoot you in the head as an example to others, she said. She thought more politely than the man deserved. Get next to the hole. You're going in on one. Three. Two. The man dove through, Amos cutting through the nylon bands as he went. The hole didn't close over him, but only because Amos kept carving the sides. Next up, Bobby said, pointing at the nearest soldier. You. Three. Two. One. Again and again, Bobby shoved one of her team through the molten hole of the hull. The abandoned magnetic locks clustered around it like wildflowers in a garden, the cut tethers shifting as the ship shifted, like seaweed in an unsteady current. Medina swam above them, and twice Bobby caught glimpses of the Rocinante's drive plume limning the station like a sunrise that never came. Gonna be tight, Babs. This is taking a lot more fuel than I budgeted. Keep going, she said. He did. 8, 9, 10. And then it was just the two of them. We're good, she said. Give me the rig, I'll get you in. I appreciate that thought, Amos said, but just between you and me, you're not that good a welder. Head in, I'll make it. No heroic gestures. Oh, I'm not dying out here, Amos said, and pointed toward the interior of the ship with his chin. Worst case scenario, I'm dying inside there. Bobby shifted her magnetic locks to the edge of the burning hole, then launched through, tucking her legs in. Arms caught her and pulled her to the side. The suit's work lights filled the space between the hulls with blue-white radiance. It was eerie. It was familiar as a well-loved face, but wrong. Where spars of titanium, ceramic, and steel should have been, crystals grew. Lines of fracture shot through them and then disappeared like watching lightning discharge in a bottle. Where sheets of metal and carbon lace should have been, seamless blankets of something that she tried to think of as lobster shell, and then fabric, and then ice defined the spaces. It was unmistakably a Martian destroyer. And it was nothing she'd ever seen before. Coming through, Amos said, and she turned to pull him safely to a handhold. The hole where they'd breached squeezed tight. It didn't completely close, but the opening ended up 5 centimeters across. In the work lights, Amos smiled his empty, amiable smile. Well, that part's done, he said. Hope the next hull's a bit more familiar, if you know what I mean. Alex was keeping the chase consistent. It was the only reason they weren't being bounced through the space between the hulls like rats in a dryer. The entry into the ship proper was always the most dangerous moment. Bobby had known that from the start. They moved quickly, bracing at the hand and footholds until they found a stretch of bulkhead. Amos checked the fuel on the welding rig and shook his head, but he didn't speak. The smoke shook and fell away with every turn of the ship like water falling from a faucet. The hull didn't heal itself. But that was the only good thing. That's going to be small, she said. It's going to get done, Amos said. Any more and we'll be trying to bend it to get through. Amos cut, and air and light spilled in from the other side. The ship's interior was still pressurized. That was odd for battle conditions. If the crew of the Storm hadn't realized they were being boarded, they were finding out now. Bobby squeezed through first into the back of a bunk room. Two rows of gel mattress bunks, not that different from the quarters on the Rossi, where the marine fire teams were meant to sleep. These beds were empty and neat. She took a position by the doorway while the others pushed in. Amos came last, slapping a plastic patch over the hole that bellied out into the space between the hulls like a balloon before it hardened.
"I don't want to shoot you bastards,"
Alex shouted through the radio. It was a code phrase. The storm was getting close. The Rossi's evasions were going to fail, and soon. Bobby popped the door open, ducked her head out and back, and a bullet tore a streak out of the frame where his skull had been.
"How many?"
the man beside her asked.
"At least one."
She looked around the bunk room for something, anything, that would give them the edge.
"This place is a death trap, and we're out of time. You three, with me. You two go in firing left, you to the right with me. If you see a grenade or anything that might be one, duck back in. Everyone else, into the bunks on your backs. Set up to shoot between your feet if the bad guys rush the door. You have 4 seconds. Go."
She picked high when they went out. The woman crouched down beside her could have been anyone, but their lives depended on each other now. Down the corridor, Bobby saw the intersection where the fire had come from before. A single head bobbed out and back. She aimed for it, but she couldn't tell if she hit. Another doorway stood across the hall. She pointed and gestured. They made the crossing in a rush. Another cabin. Bunks for 12, but no sign that they'd been used. No one fired at them. Whoever had tried before was down or fled, going for whatever reinforcements the ship had. Surprise had gotten them this far. Skill had to take it from here.
"Amos," she said into the radio.
The walls of the ship attenuated his response, but she could still hear him.
"Babs, how do you want to play this one?"
It had been too many years since her ship tactics, but this one at least was easy. The ship had 2 points of vulnerability to boarding attack, engineering and command. The enemy had the home field advantage, but if they were understaffed, they'd protect whichever one they thought she was making a play for. So the smart thing was to feint at one and hit the other.
"I'm taking these 5 and heading for ops. Wait 2 minutes, then take yours for engineering."
"You got it. Are we looking to disable or blow up?"
The storm lurched again. A smooth, rattling sound echoed through the ship like a chain slipping off a shelf. It was different enough from what she was used to that she almost didn't recognize it as PDC fire. They were going for the Rossi. Before she could speak, Saba's voice came through on the radio.
"Evacuation teams are at the docks, waiting for clear sign, yeah?"
And then, almost overlapping, Naomi's answer.
"Message received. We're going in."
The underground ships were ready to launch. Medina's sensor arrays were going down soon. The window was opening. It wouldn't stay that way long.
"The first thing you find that kills this ship, do it," Bobby said. "What about evac?"
She knew what he meant. If he could blow the reactor, should he? Was the mission more important than living through it?
"Use your judgment, big guy," she said. "I trust you."
Chapter 48. Clarissa. There were only 2 ways that she felt anymore. Either she had the shakes, or she was exhausted. The shakes part had been nasty when it started because it felt like being scared, jittery and heart racing. And because it felt like fear, she kept thinking she was afraid, and then becoming afraid without any focus or reason. Once she understood it was just her shitty aftermarket endocrine system leaking into her bloodstream, it helped.
At least, she understood that it wasn't just her going crazy with amorphous anxiety. She still shook, though. In the worst of it, she'd go back to her old mantra, the one from prison. I have killed, but I am not a killer. Because a killer is a monster, and monsters aren't afraid. She felt like she was afraid all the time now, and in that frame, it was almost comforting. The superstitious part of her kept thinking that she'd invited this shape to come into her life with the sympathetic magic of her words. The rational part thought she'd invited it by paying a shitload of money to have illegal body modifications as part of an insane adolescent revenge fantasy. That, and the part where she'd killed a bunch of people. "You okay?" Naomi asked. Clarissa lifted her hand in the same Schrödinger's answer she always had, no matter how she expressed it. Always yes, and always no. Yes, I'm fine in that I'm not presently in medical collapse. No, having that be what fine meant didn't ratify her early life choices. You? Fine, Naomi said, in a tone of voice that probably meant the same thing. Ever since Holden had been taken, a light had gone out of Naomi's eyes. After discovering the light breaker was gone and Holden with it, Naomi wasn't catatonic from grief, and so sure. Fine. They were waiting on a bench at the edge of a field in the inner face of the drum. Wheat stretched out to their right, curving up and away from them, ripening in the light of the false sun. A woman in a systems control uniform walked along the path, holding a little boy's hand. He stared at Clarissa as they passed. She could practically hear, "What's wrong with that woman, Mommy?" He was thinking it so loud. It felt a little weird being out among the normal inhabitants of Medina. All of the people going about their lives like they were trying to forget that the transport union had ever existed, picking their kids up from school, eating dinner with their friends, working their jobs and performing their duties as if they'd always done this at the wrong end of a gun, as if Laconian rules were normal, as if there weren't already things in play that were going to change everything before night. "I'm sorry about Holden," Clarissa said. She hadn't meant to, but she did. Naomi took a quick breath, let it out, like someone ripping off a bandage that had adhered a little too much to her skin. A quick pain, and then over with. "Thank you. It's not what I was expecting." "Yeah," Clarissa said. "It seems like there's always the way we wanted things to go, and there's what actually happens." A warning tone sounded through the drum, echoing with the distance and the free air. An artificial voice reassured them with its tone while it repeated, "This is an emergency alert. Report to shelters immediately, and await official instructions." "Listen," Naomi said. "They're playing our song." "Oh my," Clarissa said, laughing. "We have lived our lives wrong, haven't we?" Naomi took her arm, half as a joke and half to give her support if she needed it, and they started toward the rendezvous. Clarissa's body twitched and shuddered as she walked. Once they went below, into the corridors and halls of the drum, the traffic thickened. The alert sounded from every corner. Businesses closed their doors, kiosks shut down. Everywhere people moved quickly, some shouting and angry, but most with a kind of deathly focus. They'd had too many explosions and too much violence for any joking around. The illusion that life was normal for any of them vanished. She and Naomi waited for a gap in the flow of bodies, then ducked into a public restroom. Clarissa sat on the couch built into the wall. She felt a little nausea haunting the back of her throat, but it wasn't bad. Naomi went to the sink and washed her hands slowly, not to make them clean, but to make it look like they weren't just loitering in the place should anyone from station security come in. The plan, their part of it anyway, was simple enough. Or at least it was from Clarissa's perspective. She'd tried to walk Alex through it once, and she was pretty sure he'd only followed about half. The sensor arrays on the Medina were all linked to the main system, but they all had their own backup batteries. Shutting down the power would keep Medina from seeing where the ships went in real time, but it wouldn't clear the local caches and all the sensor arrays. As soon as the power grid came back, the arrays would check in, reconnect, and deliver everything they'd saved. And that process, right there, had a vulnerability in it. When the arrays checked in to reconnect, the system could request a diagnostic run. The arrays would take about 20 seconds to cycle through their diagnostics and return the results with a fresh check-in. During those 20 seconds, no new data came in. And if the array check-in requests got routed to a false system that only replied with diagnostic requests, they could keep doing that until some poor bastard figured out where the false route was coming from or else physically went out to the arrays and ran a new dedicated line. When she'd gotten to about this point in the description, Alex's eyes had lost their focus, and she'd simplified. Make a fake traffic card. Put the fake traffic card in at the secondary power junction. Blow the primary power junction to reset all the arrays. Arrays don't come back on without a lot of tedious work. She'd gotten a thumbs up from him then. It had been cute. It was always strange to remember that she knew things that other people didn't. Not just about power and signal routing protocols. What it was like to murder someone who'd only ever been kind to you. How it felt when the people you'd dedicated your life to killing took you in as family. Even though she knew better, she always defaulted to the idea that her life wasn't singular, that whatever she'd done must not have been that odd because, after all, she'd done it. The door opened and the bomb guy came in carrying a ceramic toolbox. Jordao. He nodded to Clarissa and then to Naomi. Between the hunch in his back and his ashy skin, he looked like a sample picture of furtive possible terrorist. If we're going to pull this off, that guy's going to have to calm the fuck down. Hey, Clarissa said.
Hoi,
he responded. Bis bien. No problems so far, Naomi said. But we've been out of touch. You heard anything?
Unauthorized launch, Jordao said as he set the toolbox beside the sink and opened it.
No subu.
Yes, that's one of ours.
Perdid,
he said, forcing a grin.
How many plays playing in one day?
One less if we don't move, Naomi said.
Jordao opened the case and tossed earpieces to her and Naomi before fitting his own.
Katria, she didn't parle eroquela, right? They're going to be down on his heart after this.
Alles la prueba?
Look like we were in a kid's school.
If this works the way it's supposed to, that won't be a problem, Clarissa said, shifting the earpiece so it was a little more comfortable.
Just stick with us and you'll be fine.
Naomi dried her hands, pulled her hand terminal out of her pocket, checked it, put it back.
We should go, she said.
Jordao closed the toolbox, hoisted it onto his hip, and followed Naomi out. Clarissa brought up the rear. The shakes were a little better, a little less. That was sort of a good thing, because she hated the shakes. It was sort of bad, because the exhaustion came next, and she needed to get through the mission. At least, enough not to slow Naomi down. Outside, the halls were emptier. This is an emergency alert. Report to shelters immediately and await official instructions. Naomi turned toward the ramp leading down toward the outside of the station. Clarissa put her hands in her pockets and tried to look bored. Her mind divided itself gracefully between rehearsing the steps that she'd need to take to swap traffic cards and watching for security patrols. When Saba broke the silence, it startled her.
Evacuation teams are at the docks, waiting for clear sign, yeah?
Naomi put a hand to her ear. Hearing her through the earpiece and in person at the same time gave her words a little echo, like they had more weight than they should have.
Message received, she said. We're going in.
It would only take a couple of minutes to swap the card and set the charges. After that, they'd get to the docks if Saba's people could hold them that long, or if Laconian security retook them, an airlock. Naomi paused at an access panel, checked her hand terminal, and nodded. This was the one. Jordao was sweating and pale. He looked worse than she did.
It's going to be okay, she said. We have a surprising amount of experience with weird situations.
Naomi leaned against the access panel. A security drone passed through the intersection behind them, but didn't turn their way. Clarissa felt a little surge of adrenaline, but it only served to highlight the growing torpor in her muscles.
Do this, she thought. Get this done. You can rest when you're dead.
The access panel clicked and slid down.
What are we doing here? Jordao said. Got to go, us.
We're doing the thing that makes the next part matter, Naomi said, then stepped aside. The guts of the ship would have looked chaotic to anyone who didn't know the thing she did. For her, there was a simple logic in every weld, every conduit, every connector. She took the doctored traffic card out of her pocket, plucked the old one out, and slotted hers in. The fault indicator barely blinked to amber, and then went back to a flickering, happy green.
Okay, she said, sliding the panel back into place. Let's go set the charges.
But when she started walking, she knew it was going to be harder than she thought. If they moved fast enough, they'd be done before she ran out of energy. That was why Naomi was here, after all, because none of them thought she could do it by herself. Because they weren't necessarily wrong. The worst part was that she'd done it to herself. The damage to her body, the wear and the weariness, were all products of conscious, determined choices made by a girl she hadn't been in decades. She carried the weight of those decisions like a sack of bones, like a toolbox full of them. Some sins carry their own punishment. Sometimes redemption meant carrying the past with you forever. She'd gotten used to that over the years, but it was still pretty fucking inconvenient.
Down here, Jordao said, waving them on.
I know, Naomi said.
The door to the primary power junction was reinforced. A red border was painted around the frame, with warnings in half a dozen languages that all meant, please be careful. There's a lot of things in here that we'll have to fix after they finish killing you. Jordao opened the door, and Naomi stepped past him into the maintenance way beyond. And then stepped backward, her arms rising. Running footsteps came from behind her, sudden and loud. A young man in the blue uniform of Laconian security stepped out from the red door, a pistol leveled at Naomi's stomach. Rough hands grabbed Clarissa by the shoulder and threw her to the floor. Jordao leaned against the wall and sank down to sitting.
"There a problem, sir?"
Naomi asked, her voice the perfect echo of innocence.
"Knees," the pistol man said. "And keep your arms up while you do it."
Naomi looked down at her. Clarissa saw no sorrow in her eyes, only calculation, and then a conclusion. Naomi sank to her knees. Jordao's head was leaned back, looking at the ceiling and taking deep, gulping breaths. He still had the toolbox under his arm, and she thought he might be about to set off the charges and turn them all to paste, until he started laughing. It wasn't mirth or gloating, but it was relief. Even before he spoke, Clarissa understood they'd been sold out. She laid her head against the rubber matting on the deck as someone put a knee in the small of her back and started pulling her arms behind her. The exhaustion was coming on stronger now. The deck felt almost comfortable. "There's a thing," Jordao said, "a thing they put behind an access panel. No sabe me que, but I can show you where, yeah?" "What was it?" the pistol asked Naomi. Naomi shook her head ruefully. "Afraid you're going to have to go fuck yourself, Koyo." He hit her, stepped forward. Clarissa felt the zip tie going around her right wrist while the guy fumbled with her left. She rolled her head. Five of them, all told. All with guns drawn. The pistol came down, ready to end Naomi where she lay. "You're sure you can find whatever it is?" the man said.
"Course I am," Jordao said.
"Where are your Marines?
You said there'd be Marines."
"Change of plan. There's statues until we can get the lockdown codes undone." He looked down at Naomi.
"Was that yours too, bitch?"
Naomi locked eyes with Clarissa. The calculation was gone. They were out of options. Which meant, really, that Naomi was out. Clarissa always had one left. It was a weird moment. Through the bone-weary tiredness, through the fear and the panic and the anger, something else opened up. Something like rage and joy, and more than all that, a profound relief. Naomi saw it in her expression, and her eyes widened. Clarissa pressed her tongue against the roof of her mouth, swirled it the way she hadn't in years. The fake glands in her body triggered, pouring their shit into her blood. It hurt. It didn't used to hurt, but this time, every one of them ached. Even the pain felt good. Time slowed down around her. She bucked, and the man on her back fell forward. He still had a hand on her right wrist, and he kept his grip as he fell. She felt her shoulder dislocate and heard the deep pop, but there wasn't any pain. Her legs were under her, and she pushed off before he hit the floor. Her right arm was shredded and useless. Her muscles were thin and fragile. Just jumping, she felt the tendons in her knees and hips strain and rip. But she was already rolling, ready to hit the wall and launch again. Pistol Man didn't shift his aim from Naomi, but the other three were drawing down on her, moving slowly as someone underwater. One pistol barked, but the shot only tore into the anti-spalling fabric on the wall. Clarissa spun through the air, her ruined arm trailing behind her. She led with her knee, and it felt like dancing, like flying. Her aim was still good. She brought her bent knee into Pistol Man's nose, felt the cartilage give in her joint and his face, the two of them crumbling together. She'd been sick for so long, she'd let it make her fragile. So much of her life had become nurturing what fading health she had, rationing it like one canteen that had to get her across a desert. Now she gulped it, and it felt wonderful. The two who hadn't fired did now at almost the same instant. One missed, but one bullet dug into the thin meat over her ribs. It hurt, but the pain was distant. She barreled into the closest of them. As they fell, she wrapped her good arm around his head, cradling it carefully so that when they landed, she could snap his neck. She hit the deck hard, pulled, and felt his spine give way. "I have killed, but I am not a killer." She caught up the gun from his hand as the others turned. Clarissa felt the battle cry in her throat, felt the force of air and sound rattling her trachea, felt the gun she'd stolen kick. The woman nearest her fired wild, and Clarissa placed a bullet in the woman's cheek, snapping her head back. That was two. The one who'd been on Clarissa's back jumped toward her. She put a bullet through his teeth. Three. Naomi was scrambling for Pistol Man's fallen weapon. He was still down, holding his shattered nose like that was his biggest problem. Clarissa shot him twice in the center of mass. There was only one guard left, and he was close to Clarissa. She could see down the barrel of his gun. She saw the fear in his eyes. He fired. He couldn't miss. Her leg gave way under her, but she fired a shot back on the way down. It took the last guard in the throat. She landed hard, but her blood was still made from light and rapture. She rolled, knelt. Her abdomen ached, and it was hard to pull in a full breath. Jordao looked at her like he was seeing the devil. "No, I'm sorry," he shouted in some universe close to hers. "Fuck your sorry. Sorry doesn't fix shit." She didn't know if she'd yelled or if it was just in her head. Either way, she shot him. Once in the belly, and when he doubled over, the crown of his head right where a little bald spot was just starting. Then the rush was over. It wasn't as bad as she'd remembered. There was the retching and the feeling of illness, the helplessness, the pain. But at some point, all of that had become familiar, so the experience of it wasn't as bad. Or else she was slipping into shock. Shock, or something like it. Naomi cradled her head, and she noticed she was lying down. Her mouth tasted like bile. The guards and the traitor were spread throughout the hallway. The air stank of blood and gunpowder. It looked like a scene from hell. All of the years she'd spent living with her regret, doing quiet penance for the lives she'd ended. And now, the only thing she could think was, that was fun. Words were happening somewhere nearby. "Stay with me, Claire." She remembered Naomi was there and opened her eyes again. She didn't remember closing them. Naomi was spattered with blood, her face pale. Ren stood behind her. He was wearing some kind of black robe that made her think of Jesuits. "I'm a monster," Clarissa said. "No, you aren't, baby. You're not a monster. You're not." Which meant Naomi had misunderstood. Clarissa had meant, "I'm not afraid." She tried to think what to say that would clarify that, but it was a lot of effort. And what did it matter, really, if anyone else understood? She knew. "Fuck it," she thought. "Some things you take to your grave." Clarissa Melpomene Mao closed her eyes. Chapter 49. Bobby. When she was young, Bobby had a recurring dream of finding a door in her room that led to some new, exotic part of her quarters that her family had forgotten, or else never known about. Those dreams had been eerie, but also beautiful, full of promise and wonder and threat. The gathering storm was exactly like being in one of those dreams. The architecture of the ship had all the same aesthetics and design as the Rocinante. The central lift, the size and spacing of the hallways and doors, even the shapes of the hand and footholds were familiar. Or, if not exactly familiar, at least related. Part of the same family. Laconian and Martian had the same cultural DNA, and as much as anything else, the ship proved it. But it was also strange. The decks didn't have seams or bolts. The foam and fabric on the bulkheads had the same uncanny, fleshy texture as the hull. The lights were different somehow, too. She didn't know if it was the spectrum or the brightness or the way that there seemed to be some kind of subtle motion in them, but everything felt a little bit like being underwater. Like the ship was a huge fish with the bioluminescent glow of the deepest seas. It was home, but wider, larger, and changed. They moved from hall to hall in strict formation, covering each other as they went. The rattle of PDCs was joined by something else she didn't recognize. Some Laconian version of torpedo fire was her best guess. The deck lurched and canted as the ship maneuvered around them, but the main drive never cut out, so down was always down. She'd expected the ship's defenses to meet them at the central lift that led to ops. It was the obvious choke point, and holding that space meant controlling movement between all the decks it passed through. If she'd been in charge, all the hatches would have been open, and a dozen rifles pointing down, ready to put holes through any head that popped out. Instead, there had been three Laconians with pistols retreating up it, and firing behind them, more to discourage Bobby and her people from following them than to actually injure anyone. They were holding up on the command deck. She wasn't sure whether that was a good thing or a bad one. "Amos," she said, and when he didn't answer, turned up her broadcast power. "Amos, check in."
"Little hairy down here, Babs," Amos replied. "Made it to what I'm pretty sure is supposed to be a machine shop. Fucked if I know what half the stuff is, though."
"Any contact with the enemy?"
"Yeah, we lost a couple."
The sound that interrupted them was like something metal being torn by brute strength. It took a fraction of a second to recognize it as high-rate weapons fire. Amos was shouting over it, not to her. She waited, tension knotting her gut. She wanted to know what was happening, but not badly enough to divide Amos's attention. He grunted once, and she was sure he'd been hit. Something loud happened, a grenade maybe, and the firing stopped.
"Still with me, big man?"
"Yeah," he said. "We just had a little thing there. Architecture's a little weird, and it looks like there's a bunch of stuff down here built out of, I don't know, crystals or bug shells. You remember those buildings on Illus? Like them."
The deck shifted hard to the right, and Bobby's head went a little swimmy from the Coriolis. She grabbed onto a handhold.
"I wasn't on Illus."
"Oh, right," Amos said. "Well, like them, anyway. But yeah, we're kind of stuck where we are unless we can make another hole. We're looking for something to cut through the bulkhead with. We'd like to get that done before they decide to rush us."
Alex's voice cut in. He wouldn't be able to hear them unless she turned up her broadcast power a lot more, but the Rosie's transmitters had more than power enough.
"Hey, y'all. The storm's breaking off our little dance out here. It looks like she's trying to get back to port. Might be a good time to launch anyone that wants to get launched.
You're getting short on time.
Saba responded.
Still waiting for the prison stragglers. Any ships ready, I'll get them gone, but keep that bastard off us as long as you can, yeah?
I'm on it,
Alex said. Bobby ground her teeth. She wanted to break off. Head down to back up Amos and his squad. Bad tactics. She needed to stick to the plan. Amos was going to be all right. She had to believe that. The lift tube went up the length of the ship, all the way to the ops deck. No one was waiting up there that she could see. That didn't mean no one was waiting.
All right, she said to her team. This is going to be just the same. Two move forward while three cover, and then the forward pair cover while the three catch up. Only instead of going from door to door, we're going up from deck to deck. If we start drawing fire, we'll try to get the lift going up before us. But it's probably locked down, and I don't want to announce where we are.
The belters all gave their assent and took position. Bobby and a tall man went first, climbing the handholds like they were free climbing. She glanced over the top of the deck before she climbed up, but she would have been surprised to find an ambush there. She leaned against the wall, gun pointed up. It looked like the hatch to ops was closed. Leaving the rest open gave the defenders a great line of fire, but they weren't using it. Not yet. She gestured to the others, and didn't take her eye off the enemy as they scrambled up beside her. The storm was bigger than the Rosie. There were eight more decks between her and ops. The last step was going to be tricky, but gravity cut out, and she grabbed for a handhold by reflex as the ship spun around her, sweeping her legs perpendicular to the deck. As suddenly as it had cut out, it came back. A hard burn, 4 or 5 G's slamming her down. The impact knocked the breath out of her, and then gravity cut out again. A moment of spin on the float, and another high G microburn. She and her team were braced now. The float and burn happened 3 more times. It seemed ready to keep going forever.
Amos?
Hey there, Babs.
Is this you? Did you break something?
Nope. Whatever they're doing, this here is the product of conscious choice.
I think...
A hard burn made her grit her teeth. Then the float.
I think they're trying to shake us around like bugs in a can.
Hard burn, and the float.
That's gonna make this inconvenient. They trying to slow us down? Until they can get back to port.
Hard burn and float. Her mind shifted. Delaying and heading back to the docks made the most sense if the storm was undercrewed. It also explained why she wasn't catching heavier fire from the command deck. If the Laconians could get back to reinforcements, she wouldn't have a chance. And if she didn't, no one else would either. 2 more cycles of float, turn, and slam her into the deck failed to dislodge her from her place. When Amos spoke again, she could hear the effort in his voice.
That could be a problem. That's what I was thinking.
Another round of gunfire pressed its way through the radio.
Not sure I'm going to be able to stop that from happening.
All right, Bobby said. New orders. Don't die until I say so.
If I find a way to kill this bird,
then act like I said so, but don't stick your head out just to look for it.
You got a plan?
Amos asked.
That'd be generous, she said, but I've got something I'm going to do.
The ship kept doing its stuttering bounce like one of the first-generation exploration ships that exploded nuclear bombs as a propulsion system. Even for the crew that made it to crash couches, it was a miserable way to travel. She took a deep breath, felt the rhythm of it, and on the next float, pulled herself out to the lift shaft. 2 good handholds, 2 good footholds, and suddenly, she weighed 5 times her usual. Her fingers and toes screamed in protest. Her back and shoulder flirted with cramping. The float came back, and the ship turned. But she was climbing up. Just one set of handholds before the weight came back. But she was closer. If she fell, it was a long way to the bottom. But no one was going to be shooting down at her during this, and they didn't think she could climb while this was going on. That was it as much as anything. With every round of release and spin and high G burn, she made her way higher, not looking back to see whether her team was with her. She needed all her focus for this. Sweat beaded on her forehead, and the suit's helmet fan kicked up to high so that her faceplate wouldn't fog up. She was burning through oxygen fast enough that a 3-hour supply would last her maybe one. She thought about taking a break at one of the decks along the way and stripping off her helmet entirely, but if the Laconians decided to vent the ship after that, well, that would be unfortunate. Better to play it safe. Or as safe as free climbing with a full destroyer's depth of decks below her in radically uncertain gravity could be. Saba's voice came again when Bobby still had 3 more decks to go before she hit ops. Sensor arrays are down. We're launching everything. No more time to wait.
I'll try to keep you covered, Malaclips, Alex said. The storm is live and a threat. I can try knocking her torpedoes down, but treat her like she's got teeth.
Bien, Saba said.
And I've a package on its way to you, Rocinante. Keep an eye open.
Alex swore under his breath. She didn't have time to guess why. Another moment of float. Another collapse into terrible weight. The temptation to go faster, to try for 2 handholds up instead of just 1, was a trap. It meant less time to get braced, and that was an invitation to fall. It hurt. It took forever. It was the right way. She couldn't get greedy. The pain in her hands was getting worse, but her feet almost seemed to be getting used to it. That, or they were going numb. She was over halfway up. 3.5 more decks and she'd be at the ops deck. At the closed plate that kept the lift locked in place. 2.5. 1 more. The float came again. She moved up. Her eyes were fixed on the seam where the lift plate would slide open. Where, if this was like the other Martian ships, she'd be in. It would make the most sense to take cover and fire down at the borders. At her. She waited for the next acceleration, but it didn't come. Only a gentle press as the ship maneuvered. That was bad.
The storm is on approach to the dock, Alex said, and his voice sounded like ashes. Anybody has a good idea? I'm listening.
Her arms and legs were trembling from the effort, and sweat stung her eyes. She risked looking down. Her team was following, but they were only about halfway up. This one was hers. Voices came from the ops deck, sharp, barked orders, a clattering, probably from a weapons locker. They knew there wouldn't be much time, but they were also thinking she had a lot more territory to cover than she did. The lift plate slid aside, and she reached in and took the blue-sleeved arm by the elbow and hauled the man attached to it through and down. He bounced against a couple walls before he caught himself, and by then her team had their guns on him, and Bobby was through the opening and onto the ops deck. 3 people, in the most oddly designed crash couches she'd ever seen. Bobby raised her pistol, definitely undercrewed. A fair-haired man saw her first and yelped, "Commander Davenport!" An older man moved forward, older than the others, anyway. He still looked like a puppy.
"Get us into the dock, whatever happens."
"I am Gunnery Sergeant Roberta Draper of the MMC,"
Bobby snapped. I will kill every one of you if anyone touches the controls. Davenport lifted a defiant chin.
You have your orders.
Doesn't have to go like that, Bobby said.
You know where that ends. Your people dead, mine too. Probably a lot of civilians if I have to ram this boat into the station to kill it. I said don't touch those controls.
The pilot flinched back, shot a look at Davenport. He stared hard at her, like he was looking at his death. Like he was trying to talk himself into being brave, and hadn't quite managed it yet. There was a chance there in the space between who he was and who he was trying to be. Killing these three wouldn't fix the situation in engineering, wouldn't save Amos. Behind her, her team was floating up onto the command deck. She wished they wouldn't. More pressure on the Laconians was only going to cement their position. When she spoke, she tried to make her voice calm and soothing. Here's the situation. All your people die, and all mine too, or all of us live. Now, you can decide whether this bunch of amateurs and assholes is worth a crew of Laconia's best.
Hey, one of her team said.
She ignored him.
You expect me to believe you won't steal the ship?
Davenport said. Well, I wasn't planning to until just now, Bobby thought. But since you mention it...
I'm not talking about the ship. I'm talking about you and yours either put out an airlock with suits and bottles or else killed here.
I've seen the way you people work, he spat. If we put down arms, you'll kill us anyway. You have no honor.
Bite your fucking tongue, Bobby said. I'm Martian Marine Corps. If you live through this, you go ask your old-timers what that means. They'll tell you how lucky you are I didn't crack your ass the other way for just saying it. If I say you and yours are safe, then you're fucking safe.
Davenport said nothing, but there was something behind his defiance. She thought it might be hope. She opened a connection to Amos.
Hey, big man.
Hey, Babs, he said.
He sounded winded.
They got us into engineering. Give me another 5 minutes, I can light this bastard up. May take a bite out of the station when we blow, but I figure that's someone else's problem. How's it going up there?
Your team needs to stand down, she said. No aggressive action toward the enemy. Confirm that. There was silence on the line.
That's not the plan the way I heard it, Amos said.
Amos, listen to me. Stand down. Don't blow the ship. And if anyone down there kills another Laconian, I will shoot them myself, including you. Understood?
Yep.
Stand by. If I need you to go back to Plan A, I'll know in about a minute. Davenport looked from her to her team arrayed behind her. He scowled. Bobby felt her breath go shallow. She waited.
30 seconds, Mr. Davenport, she said. You joined the wrong side, Gunny, Davenport said. You should have been one of ours.
25 minutes later, the surviving crew of the gathering storm were tethered together in the cargo airlock. Their arms were secured behind their backs, their ankles were tied together, and the maneuvering thrusters on their vac suits didn't have any canisters. Amos and one of his team went through checking their seals one last time and strapping emergency beacons to their knees. The Laconian commanding officer watched Bobby now with the intensity of someone planning his revenge. Amos knocked on Davenport's faceplate to get his attention.
Can you breathe in there? Getting good air? Because if you're not, this is the time to say something.
He nodded once, a perfect physical representation of resentment. Outside the storm, ships were fleeing through the gates following the schedule Naomi had built. By and large, they were going to the smaller colonies where there was less traffic parked waiting for the gates to reopen. But some were going to the well-established places like Baragaun Complex, and trusting to their ability to evade any traffic monitoring on the other side to get them to safety. There was still a little more than an hour before the last of them was slated to go, and then the storm following up at last. If things went right, Medina's sensors would be deep in their routing seizures for at least 4 hours, and the prisoners had enough air for 10. A 6-hour window for pickup seemed like more than enough. Amos gave her the thumbs up, and Bobby nodded him on. He undid the tether from the airlock deck, pushed off, and floated through to pull himself to a stop beside her. Bobby cycled the lock, and when the outer door opened to the darker-than-space of the slow zone, she touched her radio. "Okay," she said. "Let's see if the controls work the way they said."
"Copy that, Boss Mung," her new belter pilot said.
The storm shifted, pushing gently to the side. The prisoners seemed to float away, though really Bobby was the one moving. Out beyond them, in the darkness, a distant drive plume glowed like a star, and then, passing through a gate, went out.
"Okay," she said. "We're good. Make sure we get far enough away before we light up the drive. I don't want to save them just so you can burn them down in the drive plume."
"Sasa," the pilot said. "Alex," she said, then remembered her suit was still on the low-power stealth settings. She changed it and tried again.
"Alex, where do we stand?"
A different voice answered. A man that it took Bobby a few seconds to recognize.
"We're hugged close to Medina for the extraction."
"Houston?" she said. "Is that you?"
"Now that you fuckers have come to your senses about the immorality of centralized power, yeah, it's me. And I'm ready to accept your apology as soon as you untwist your diapers."
"He's gonna be a joy," Amos said placidly. "I kinda missed him."
Bobby killed her mic.
"I can't tell if you're being sarcastic. I need to know these things."
She turned the mic back on.
"We have a change of plan. We won't need pickup."
"Negative," Alex said. "I'm not leaving you behind."
"We're flying escort," Bobby said. "The storm is ours."
"No shit," Alex said, then whooped.
"Holy crap, you took a prize? Looks like you got yourself a ship after all, Captain Draper."
Naomi's voice cut in, clipping into Alex's last syllables.
"I'm coming out."
"All right," Alex said. "2 to pick up, and then we can get in the flight queue out of this dump."
"1, Naomi said. 1 to pick up. We ran into a problem. Clarissa went down fighting. I wouldn't have made it out without her. None of us would." Bobby's throat went tight. She looked over at Amos, and he smiled his usual amiable smile. Shrugged. Just for a moment, she saw something underneath the expression. Pain and loss and sorrow and rage. And then he was just himself again.
"Damn," Alex said. "I'm sorry to hear that."
"Okay," Houston said. "I have you on the scope. We'll slide over and get you."
"Naomi," Bobby said, "when you get on the Rossi, I'll need you to find a safe place for the storm and the escape queue."
"I'm on it," Naomi said.
Now that Bobby knew to listen, she heard the exhaustion in her voice, the weariness of grief. She turned off her mic, turned toward Amos, but he was pulling himself back toward the lift. She followed him, a little trickle of adrenaline coming in, waiting to see what was coming next. At the lift, Amos stopped and scratched his nose.
"I was thinking I should probably get a few of the new kids. Go through the ship. Just make sure we don't have anyone on board we didn't mean to have on the ride."
For a moment, she thought about letting it go, letting Amos fall back into his usual self. It would be easier. It would feel more respectful. It was what Holden would have done. "I need to know if you're okay," she said.